Feeling lost and alone? Looking for validation from your partner, only to find the feeling of rejection and continued frustration? You're together yet so far apart. Now your frustration has turned into disdain and resentment. Your insecurities have begun to affect every aspect of your life. Ironically, you have now become the cold and detached one, shielding yourself from the uncertainties of your relationships. Dr. April Brown has created Bringing Intimacy Back, a series of discussions that are designed to help you reclaim what you have lost along the way. Dr. April will help you rediscover and reconnect to the intimate relationship your heart so desires. Go to www.bringingintimacyback.com today and let the healing begin.
Welcome to the Bringing Intimacy Back show, where intimacy is real. And today on the show, we aim to help increase intimacy in your relationships, your relationship with your higher power, community, business network. We give you the secret power to intimacy. And on today's show, what we're talking about is intimacy and sexual dysfunction. I know I should, but sometimes things just doesn't work right, happen right, and all that kind of stuff. So, but today I have a special guest. And of course, she's been on my show a few times and I love having her. And she's absolutely, as you see her, beautiful and not only on the outside, but also in the inside. And her name is Paola Rodriguez. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, April. So excited to be back with you. We always have such a fun time. And thank you again for opening up the space for us to be able to talk about sexuality openly. I'm really grateful to be back and bringing intimacy back.
Yes, definitely. It's so great to see you and stuff. And so as we start this show up, can you tell us a little bit about your background?
Sure. So I have been a psychotherapist for a very long time. I've been in different fields. You know, I work in foster care, school psychology, but now I am in the beautiful world of sex therapy. I started working with couples when I was practicing in Boston. And it's just really interesting because when I started talking about sex with all of my clients, I started to understand that it's such an important part of the being, right? It's a place, especially in the relationship, where it's the only place where we want our mind to kind of go on a vacation, right? Every other part of the relationship, we have to think, we have to be present. And so I think, you know, I'm really excited to just be able to provide sex therapy to my community. And that's what I'm doing now.
Oh, yeah. So how did you even start in that? Because sometimes it's like taboo to start in and to talk about sex. But how did you even get interested in the field?
So I was working for a group practice, and one of my mentors, you know, he's a sex therapist. He was going through the ASEC certification. He said, "Paula, I have so many cases that I just don't have enough time. Would you like to help me?" And he took me under his wing. And when I started learning about sexuality, you know, one of the things as a sex therapist, one of the most important trainings is that you also have to look within.
Right.
And in order for you to be able to have good sex, you have to really challenge the shoulds and the sex is dirty and touch is bad. And so it was such a nice process, not only for me, you know, to really understand sexuality different, but it really sparked this interest that I wanted to help others understand sexuality different. And it's been a wonderful journey ever since.
Okay, good. Definitely. And so especially in our culture and in your culture, how is that even, that topic even explored?
It's not, unfortunately.
It's not. Okay, it's not, okay.
You know, and I think, you know, women are taught to quiet down their sexuality.
Right.
The message for men is to perform, right?
Right.
And, you know, tapping into their emotions, it's almost like a threat to their masculinity. And so I think when any type of sexual issue shows up, imagine it takes men 6 years before they come to a sex therapist.
Wow, six
That's
years.
That's the average before they've tried anything and anything.
Right.
And for women, you know, same thing. So I think I am Colombian, and as a Latina woman, you know, there was no sex education. There was no one told me that it was okay to explore your body. Yet, you know, they do give us the message of don't get pregnant, but how do you even do that to begin with?
Yes.
Like, if you put your finger in my ear, that was, you know, that was going to be important. So I think there's such lack of sex education, and it's not, you know, if a woman is able to be sexually open, unfortunately, there's a lot of negative messages around that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I'm in most cultures, especially for the man, if he has any difficulties, it's affects their ego.
Absolutely. Even being able to talk about it, right? Because I think we're living in a world where it's fix it and do it yourself kind of thing, right?
Exactly.
So when men eventually come to me, they have tried creams, pills, variety of partners, porn, you name it, right? And so I'm kind of like the last stop on the train, but I really should have been one of the first stops,
yes.
Right? So I think for men, it is about ego, it is about performing, and we're not, when they're not performing well, then they blame themselves or identify themselves as failures. And then that creates a really, negative message to just self-worth and self-esteem.
Right. And it just, for many times, I feel like they just totally withdraw.
Absolutely. And imagine if two people, and really what you just said is a pattern that I see a lot, right? Mm-hmm. Women don't know how to talk about it. Men don't know how to talk about it.
So they eventually just withdraw.
Exactly, because it creates conflict in the relationship, so you just rather not talk about it at all.
Right. And when conflict and when you just withdraw, there's really, and we're going to talk specifically about sex, but there's sometimes really no intimacy.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, and many times that's where it starts, to create a type of intimacy, which is sex.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. How do you see intimacy?
So, I think in order for me to see it, I would have to define it. And that's a core question that I always ask the people that I work with.
Right.
You know, define what intimacy means for you. For me, you know, there's this really great definition that I really like. Intimacy is the perfect mix between vulnerability and safety.
Vulnerability and safety, yes.
And intimacy is also physical, emotional, mental, sexual, spiritual.
Right.
Intimacy is what makes this relationship unique, is what differs this relationship from anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
But vulnerability is a must in intimacy.
Right. But I'm also thinking when you're having sexual problems, it is so hard to even discuss that or to even be more vulnerable. You know, that first, that
so
V word.
Difficult.
Yes, it's
so
just
difficult.
Yes, because then you feel like, is something wrong with me? What did I not do? This and that. And there's just so much variety of different stuff.
And you couldn't have said it better.
Right.
I think for a lot of my women, especially, mm-hmm. right, when they come in, they have identified themselves as the problem.
Right.
And to your point, when there is conflict, somebody tries to blame someone, and blame is just an easy way to discharge discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
And blame is also quicker than self-reflection.
Right.
It's easier for me to say there's something wrong with you than maybe I'm not being intimate enough in this relationship, or maybe I'm not being vulnerable enough, or maybe I'm not opening up a space of emotional intimacy in order for us to get to physical or sexual intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think more vulnerability, less blame.
Right. And that can create more of, like you said, safety. Because that's what takes it. Yes. Yeah, definitely. So as we're starting to talk about sexual dysfunction, what do you define sexual dysfunction as?
So I would say that sexual dysfunction is anything that gets in the way of, you know, of a development of sexuality, right? I would say the sexual issues, anything that just kind of creates a barrier for you to enjoy this part of yourself, right? Because sex can also be self-exploratory, self-stimulating, but also with your partner. Anything that gets in the way of functioning.
Right. And that anything can be psychological, it could be environmental, it can be medical. Yes.
Exactly. So something that we know is that 80 to 90% of sexual issues, sexual dysfunction, sexual barriers, however we want to call it, have a psychological component.
80 to 90%. Wow.
80 to 90%, right? One of the first things that's important to understand is assessment. Have you had this issue lifelong?
Right.
I've seen many clients. Mm-hmm. And only one of my clients had actually erectile problems since he was a teenager. This is not usually the case.
Case, right.
Very rare. So that would be a case that is lifelong. acquired, it started happening after I went through menopause. It started happening after I turned 50. Situational, I can only get an orgasm by myself, but I can't do it with my partner. Mm-hmm. Generalize, I can't have an orgasm regardless of situation, regardless of partner, but maybe by myself. So I think it's really important to understand, what is this about, right? Right. And it's kind of like the chicken or the egg kind of thing, right? Because I'll give you an example. For example, vaginismus, that is now called pelvic floor disorder, right? Let's say, so one, for those of us that are not in Florida, Florida, one of, you know, our busiest highways, and I know it goes all the way down the coast, is 95 South. So if I'm going down 95 South and I'm driving, and all of a sudden I get into a really bad accident, my car's totaled, I'm completely safe. Next time that I'm going to get on 95 South, even though I'm in a new car, I wasn't hurt at all, I am going to be hypervigilant. And when I'm hypervigilant, my body becomes tense.
Exactly.
So with women, vaginismus or pelvic floor disorder, for those of you who don't know, is when the muscles of the vagina completely close up, tense mm-hmm. up, and nothing can come in, not even my pinky finger, right? This is something that's psychological because this person has associated something with pain. For example, mm-hmm. people that grow up in a very religious family that they say sex is dirty, sex is bad, but this person decides to have sex before marriage. Right. So they think body-wise, I'm good, but mentally they're not ready. They close up, they experience pain associated with bad. And anytime that person is going to have intercourse, the body tenses up. And so mm-hmm. you have to learn not only to relax the body, but also work through the negative messages that we got around sexuality. Some issues can be medical. There is medications that may cause, for example, antidepressants may cause a little bit of delayed ejaculation. Age is also something that happens. What do we know with age? When we get a little older for women, the vagina walls tend to thin out a little bit. So lubrication is not as it used to be. For men, you know, testosterone starts to lower, but I think what's important is not to compare to what it was like before, but to find a new meaning of what feels mm-hmm. good. But I am a big believer, Dr. Brown, that we need the mind-body.
Right, people definitely.
People go to quick fix, right? Let's buy more lingerie. Let's play more toys without really focusing on the mind. What's keeping me from entering to this space with you?
Right. And many times you won't get there unless you talk about it.
Oh,
you understand what I'm saying? Because if you keep it all in your head and just like, oh my gosh, or you're laying there, you're like, I'm in so much pain. And of course your face sometimes shows it. Yeah. But until you sit there and talk about it, and sometimes even talking about it with a professional, then you can kind of see the whole picture.
And many what's worse is that people try to get there, but with the wrong tools. Yes. So after you've tried pills and creams and like, you know, variety of partners or whatever it may be.
Right. And they find these things online many times.
Online.
Yes.
Exactly. Yeah. And then the person says, wow, I've tried all these things and it hasn't worked. Then there must be something innately wrong with me. And what feeling pops up? Good old shame.
Shame. And that and will shut down your vagina.
Shut down everything, right?
yes,
it definitely shuts down your vagina. And shame lives in secrecy, silence, and judgment. One of my favorite experiences is when people say to me, I have never talked to anyone about this. Because that tells me that now they're allowing me to help them carry this.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So can't emphasize enough, people, please go to a professional. Because we're here to help. And
Yes. And definitely. And when you go with a professional, it is confidential. We haven't talked
Everything
about
is
that.
Confidential.
So don't think that we are out there sharing the information. And many times it's stuff we've heard before, but everybody's story is a little different. So it's not like you're going to shock your therapist.
No. And to your point, you know, because people, it's so funny. They kind of look around and they're like, have you seen anything like this? I'm like, many times, right? So, and I think, you know, my men, I work with a lot of men, you know, and I really do enjoy work with men as well. And I think you know, we do have to process what does it feel like talking to a woman about sexual stuff. I think as clinicians, it's really important to bring that into the room. But our first priority is your safety or your confidentiality. So everything that you tell us, it's something that we're going to keep in the room. It's between you and I. So very important for people to know that.
Right. Because many times, like you said, this is their first time ever, you know, going into a therapist. And many times, I don't know about you, but I think people come in with one thing that they want to discuss, but really they want to discuss sexual dysfunction or something else. But many times they're shy to discuss it at first.
Yes. And I think, you know, and everything, imagine there's this great concept that tell me how you talk and I'll tell you how you sex.
Right.
Right. If we don't know how to talk about it, then it's really hard for us to actually address it.
Right. Right. Definitely. Yes. Yeah. So we're going to take a short little break. And when we come back, we're going to go into more of, and you just rambled and talked about a variety of different dysfunctions. And so I want to talk about some of the common sexual dysfunction for men and some of the common sexual dysfunction for women. So people understand that they're not the only one. Yes.
Beautiful.
Yes. So on our break here, today I want to talk a little bit about a new thing that I'm doing. It's called vacation counseling. And vacation counseling, if you're out there and you're a couple and maybe you're struggling with communication and a variety of issues, here in Southwest Florida next summer, we're doing vacation counseling where you can actually have a vacation in a luxurious villa, a luxurious vacation rental place, and have some therapy. And there will be a couples therapist, individual, and a sex therapist. So please just check us out online. It's called www.vacationcounseling.com. All right. So now that we're back a little bit, let's talk about some common sexual dysfunction that you and I have seen for women first, and then we'll talk a little bit about men.
Sure. So for me, you know, the number one, April, for women is our inability to stay in the present moment, right? That's why.
Exactly. Yes.
Because, you know, as women, you know, we're amazing, right? We're very adaptable. Right. We do a lot of different things.
We try to multitask.
And multitask is the enemy of mindfulness, people.
Multitasking
is doing more than one thing without giving it enough attention.
Right.
So when at the end of the night, when we want to connect with our partner and we're there, we are thinking about anything and everything. Right. Yes. And the second one would be pain during intercourse. Right. Mm-hmm. And you guys, lubrication is your friend.
Right.
Lube it up. Right. Lubrication is your friend. You know, but pain can be due for to many different things. You know, positions, you know, everybody's different. So we really have to figure out what works.
Right, exactly.
But yes, I think that would be the main ones. Would you agree?
Yes, I agree with you. And also, I think sometimes people get upset because they don't have orgasms a certain way that they expect other people. I mean, from, I forgot what that movie, it's one of my favorites. But with Meg Ryan, when she's like screaming and yelling. Yes, but people have this fantasy about how orgasms should feel and all that kind of stuff. And thinking that they should only lay a certain way and that kind of stuff and feel bad when it doesn't happen.
Oh, do you see that? That's a big one too, right? Because I think, I mean, you know, just, I share this all the time and I know I've shared it in your shows before, but I'm going to do it again.
Yes, that's okay.
You know, 1 out of 4 women have orgasms through penetration, only 1 out of 4, 25% people. So I think, you know, it's so important to understand, first of all, that there's nothing wrong with you. When I if somebody allows me to talk about the subject, I'm going to tell them at a party, in a bar, I'm like, this is that. And people are really thankful, mostly women, because they're like, oh, men too. I educate whoever allows me to. So I think, you know, part of understanding that and really self-exploring and understanding your body and understanding what feels good. I think porn gives us a lot of negative messages or unrealistic messages about what sex should look like or be like.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and exactly. I'm glad you mentioned how we should get to know our bodies, because many times men can pick out their penises or whatever, but for women, we don't know what we look like. We're afraid to touch ourselves. And the more you know, the more you can communicate.
And even for men, April, because I think, you know, sometimes I ask my men to go home and masturbate without porn.
Right.
And they look at me like I'm crazy. They're like, what do you mean? That's like impossible. It's not impossible, but it's, right, again, taking that idea of mindfulness. Mm-hmm. What feels good?
Exactly.
What feels good about your testicles, your shaft? Like what, you know, more friction, less friction, and using this foreign idea for some of us now. Back in the day, it was very common. Good old imagination.
Exactly.
Right? Yes. Go with the sensations. That's really, for those of you that don't know really mindfulness. Mindfulness is being able to just really notice your experience. Be in the moment.
Be in the present moment.
If interrupting thoughts come in, we notice that they're there, but you get back into the present moment.
Right. Without judgment. Yes.
Without judgment.
Yes. Yes. And many times we end up judging ourselves, but we need to learn how to be in the present moment.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yes. So with the sexual dysfunctions for men, what are the common ones do you see there?
So for men, so research shows, and I think it goes back and forth, but early ejaculation, right? Yes. Which used to be called premature ejaculation. And remember, this is less than 60 seconds or 20 strokes.
Right.
Right. And there's a lot of loss of control when it happens. And then erectile dysfunction. But I also think, you know, again, you guys, going back to assessment, right? Mm-hmm. Because a lot of young people, they're like, oh my God, I have erectile dysfunction disorder. No, you know, this, right, is just about having unrealistic expectations of what it should look like, right? We live in a society nowadays where younger generation are really dealing with this idea of perfection and validation. You better get it right the first time,
yes,
right? And we got to be validated by everybody and be successful in our 20s. You know, it's a lot of pressure. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, it's really important to make sure that you actually meet criteria. That's why it's so important to talk to someone that can help you go through that versus looking in the internet, because it's like looking at WebMD. Everybody,
right, exactly,
has the flu. You know,
yes,
it's like, no, not everybody has a flu.
Yes.
So it's important to understand if you actually meet criteria.
Right, right. I know I've seen a few times where young men who maybe have been very sexually active all their lives or whatever, and then all of a sudden they find this one woman that they really are madly in love with, and they, for some reason, at some point, they feel like their penis doesn't work. And it's,
yes,
all because of the performance anxiety.
Yes.
I don't know. Have you seen that sometimes? Yes.
Oh,
and then I'm like, oh
yes,
my God, something is wrong with me. Yeah. All of a sudden, yeah, this one I truly love. And now it just doesn't work.
Yes. Well, performance anxiety is huge. So going back to the sexual response cycle, right? This was,
right,
created in the Kinsey Institute back in the 90s. And Emily Nagoski talks about this too. She's wrote the book,
Come
As You Are.
Yes.
Great book. And she talks about that we all have the accelerator and the brake, right?
Yes.
The accelerator is anything that we find stimulating. So what happens is a lot of men, women, all genders kind of look for things to accelerate, more porn, more lingerie, more this.
Mm-hmm.
But then if we don't figure out what is the brake, it's
right,
kind of like driving your car with the handbrake on. And what's here is lack of emotional connection, conflict in the relationship, performance anxiety.
Right, and stress.
And stress.
Yes.
Same thing as we were saying with the negative association to me getting in an accident in the car, performance anxiety. If the man loses their erection, or they're like, oh my God, I had to perform well because I really like this person and I'm afraid of losing,
right,
her. This connects to the body and nothing works.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm glad that we talked about this. Mindfulness and this kind of stuff. Yes. Yes. So how do you start having that conversation? How can people start talking to their partners?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's hard. It's really, really hard because, you know, I think a lot of the times, like I was saying, people identify themselves as the problem, but, you know, kind of like what we were talking about earlier, right? First of all, being able to be intentional, you know, maybe after work, setting up an intentional space is such an important fact, because sometimes we text each other, or we email,
right,
or we tell each other, you know, in the middle of the day, and really coming from a vulnerable place, starting with a lot of I statements, you know, I feel, I think, I need. And for the person on the other side, your job is not to fix, right?
Mm.
Your job.
You probably need to say that again. Your job is not to fix.
Not be fixing problems that are not yours. Your job is not to fix. I want you to practice curiosity and compassion.
Yes.
Right? Compassion is just being able to expand and understand and sit in the grief and sit in the sadness and make sure that you offer, you know, because a lot of times women come in And I am very clear with them. I say, listen, we can do some work, but eventually we may have to bring in your partner because you might have not been the part of the problem, but you're definitely part of the solution.
Right.
For women too, right? With early ejaculation, mm-hmm. eventually, you know, when we get to some exercises, we bring in the woman. Right. So it's really important. And if she's angry and if she's resentful, you know, we're not going to do great work. So really important for us to practice curiosity and compassion and not try to fix the problem.
Okay. And so in your statement of curiosity and compassion, so the curiosity, can you explain that to our audience?
Sure. So curiosity, I would start, you know, kind of like the same thing as listening skills, asking open-ended questions. What is that mm-hmm. like for you? How did it happen? Do you think that it was something maybe from previous experiences? What was that like, right? There's a difference between closed-ended questions that is kind of like, did that affect you? And the person says yes or no, and conversation is over, versus how does that affect you? Right. So opening up and continuing to have a lot of conversations around the topic, not being afraid. I think one of the biggest barriers is that nobody teaches us about how to talk about sex openly.
Right.
Right. So people tiptoe around these conversations, you know, and for those of you that, you know, may have a hard time kind of communicating, I would write a letter or an email. Right. Sometimes having the person kind of sit with the information, read it, take it in and then discuss it may not be a bad idea. Right. So there are definitely many ways to just making sure that you practice that idea of curiosity. And remember, your job is expanding. Yeah, let me understand this better. Your job is to walk away with a better understanding of what your partner is bringing in.
Okay. And so what if your partner doesn't talk about it, but you feel like your partner has a sexual dysfunction?
Yes.
How do you approach that?
Yes. So, you know, I love this idea of, so iMessages, for the folks that don't know, it's just, you know, starting a statement with I versus you.
Right.
But whole messages is starting a statement with an observation. So I would say, you know, I notice sometimes when we're together and we're being intimate or we're having sex, you know, these are the things that I've noticed. Right?
Okay.
Do you notice those as well? That's a good way of opening up without saying, you know, when we're having sex, you kind of like, you know, it feels like you don't like it. Or if it's, you know, hey, this is what I noticed. What are some thoughts, right? And opening up the conversation.
Because what if the person starts to get defensive?
You know, I would say, okay, obviously, you know, what is this about, right? Like, I think when couples can trust each other, April, and really...
Right.
Allow, if the other person says, hey, I noticed that you're getting a little defensive. I know that this is difficult to talk about, right? Practice compassion. Bring in that good old vulnerability.
Right.
And if you continue to get stuck, you know, that's when maybe talking to a couple's therapist, because our job is to help facilitate these difficult conversations. Because there's two people that are grieving, not only one. The person with the problem is just maybe the person that identifies as the problem, but there are two people are grieving. Right? What does it mean for you not to feel desire? And what does it mean for me not to be able to turn you on?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So there's two people that are grieving, and we have to be aware and remind ourselves of that constantly.
Right. And like you said, it is really good to come and talk to a therapist. And your relationship doesn't have to be, some people think you only go to a therapist if you're at rock bottom.
Yes.
But it's so much better if you come in when it's...
Oh, my God.
when you're just having minor problems.
I found this amazing analogy, right?
Okay,
my thinking days.
Yes.
Right, where it's like when a couple says therapy or divorce, that's kind of like you coming into the ER. Talking your heart and hoping that you survive.
Yes.
It's so nice to work with couples when we just start feeling a little bit of the friction. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Let's go and see. Oh, that makes it so nice because the strengths are still there and treatment and prognosis. It's so much better.
Exactly. Yes. So what are your thoughts about sexual dysfunctions and porn? It's having some people believe that, you know, any porn causes it. Or it separates a couple, or is it too much porn, or not enough porn?
Well, you know, it's interesting, April. I think, you know, back in the day, you know, porn was a little bit different. It had a story, it had a plot. And, you know, some of my couples that maybe migrated to the States, you know, from different countries, and they said, you know, we actually learned a lot about porn in terms of how to relate to one another. The problem is that no porn, it's free and it's shoved down our throat.
Right, exactly.
So it's not so much the porn, but the behavior around the porn. Mm-hmm. If the husband is watching porn for 2 hours, but it's not connecting to his wife, that's going to cause a certain level of friction.
Right.
The other thing that we have to be really mindful about is that porn really misses the romance and the sensuality train.
Right, most exactly.
Porn, you can find some stuff out there, but you know, but it misses that idea of eroticism. So what we see in porn, 3 hour erections, orgasms for everybody. Everybody says yes. No one says no. There's no discomfort and no pain.
Mm-hmm.
Hair is perfect. Makeup is on point. It is very unrealistic. So I think we have to be really mindful that real sex does not look that way. There is this woman. She's a Swedish producer. Her name is Erika Lust. Okay. And she's created eroticism. She's brought back eroticism into porn. And her films are really, really erotic.
Oh, so I think awesome.
It's how you use porn. Obviously, mm-hmm. just like when we were talking about sexual dysfunction, if porn creates a dysfunction, if you're at work and you're looking at porn sites and you spend 3 hours and you're not spending time with your family, you know, if it's disrupting right. your functioning, then it's an issue. Think right. about more compulsivity. If it becomes compulsive, then that definitely becomes an issue.
It becomes an issue, definitely. Yeah. Yes, yes. So we're going to take a little short break. And in this break here, I would like to hear exactly what you're doing and how things are going.
So for me, good. You know, so I am the founder of Life Discovery Psychotherapy. It is a little thriving practice in Miami, Florida. I, you know, just really excited. I've also been doing some events. I have a power brunch coming on Sunday for Art Basel. You know, just how can we support our community of women? We're going to talk about empowerment of women. And just, you know, doing as much as I can do to help people and educate them on what good and real sex feels like, what it should look like. And in terms of my practice, you know, it's growing and thriving. So really, really excited about that.
Yes. So what's your website or how can people find you?
Sure. So my website is www.lfdiscoverypsych.
Okay.
And anything, if you put Life Discovery Psych, I will appear.
Okay. Okay. Awesome.
And also yes. people want, I do a lot of my Instagram posts are about sex ed, and my Instagram is also Life Discovery Psych.
Right. And I do also think, if I believe correctly, on your website, you have videos,
yes,
or workshops, and then you also have some in Spanish. Am I correct?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Definitely. Yes.
So yes, I did a little show on infidelity. And so that one is in Spanish. But yes, I'm also Spanish speaking. And I think, you know, I mean, April, you know that it's just so right. nice to give back to our community and be able to, again, challenge those beliefs. We started talking about cultural beliefs and they definitely play a role.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So I'm glad that you do that and stuff. Yes. One of the things we've kind of touched a little bit about, I would like to talk a little bit about medications, and because many times we're in the mental health field. And so as you say that, and as we see people that have mental health issues, and sometimes they may not realize how sometimes taking certain medications does affect how they perform sexually.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yes.
And I'm so glad that you brought that up. Medications, I think, and when I think about medications, a lot of thoughts are coming into my mind, but I think when it comes to mental health, right, just being aware and, you know, not forever, because people get caught up. If somebody has right. depression and they're like, well, the side effects, are not everybody gets the side effects, but with depression, for example, sometimes right. the libido might lower, or we kind of think about that delayed ejaculation. With blood, high blood pressure medications, sometimes it affects orgasm for women. So okay. important to understand, you know, which medications cause what, you know, and just kind of addressing it with your psychiatrist, with your doctor, with your therapist, you know, what would this look like, and how can we move forward, right? Because I think right. also, you know, feeling depressed can also be really overwhelming for other people. Now, when we talk about medications that are being prescribed for sexual dysfunction, right? For example, for early ejaculation, some people describe antidepressants to help it delay a little bit, but those are only training wheels. Really, with mm-hmm. early ejaculation, the treatment is pretty clear cut.
Right.
And then we have medications such as Viagra, but you talked about performance anxiety. April, even with Viagra, if you haven't treated the performance anxiety, it doesn't work. It's amazing. The mind is so, so powerful. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that sometimes the people that prescribe Viagra don't educate the client on, or the patient that, listen, it's not, you know, you still have to do foreplay. You still have to be sensual, because then my women complain because they said he takes this pill and then he's ready to go. And I haven't even gone. And it takes women 15 to 20 minutes to just get to the gate of, do I want to have sex? Do I want to continue passionately kissing? So really important, understand the medications that you're taking and make sure that you talk to your doctor. Don't go on the good old internet. You know,
exactly.
Bad information out there.
Yes, yes. And I'm glad that you mentioned to talk to your doctor and to mention these things and not to just keep it quiet.
Yes.
Yes. Yes, yeah. And I'm glad you also mentioned that sometimes it is just about being present, you know.
I mean, I think April, that would be, if I could give that on a pill, like, here, take a mindfulness pill. We would be very famous in this world. But I think people, we have to be, because imagine, April, we live in a high pace, instant gratification, give it to me now, fix it myself type of culture.
Right, exactly.
Mindfulness has become a thing of the past. Mm-hmm. Right. Back in the day, you know, when you would ask somebody on a date, you would call them at home or maybe use a beeper. I used to have a beeper in high school, you know, and you had to wait and you had to, there was no way to cancel plans or this ghosting. Ghosting is a new concept. Ghosting didn't exist when I was a young clinician practicing.
Right.
You know, so I think imagination and being present. Right now, we look at that person's Facebook and we know so much about them already.
Do we really know them?
So I think, you know, part of being present is being in the moment, you know, natural in long-term relationships. People think that sex should happen naturally, and 80% of encounters are planned or semi-planned. We plan everything else.
Right.
So taking one day out of the week where you're going to connect with that person intentionally and maybe another day happens naturally, that's the way to go. But mindfulness, please look that stuff up. I have a great article on my website under blogs about mindfulness that I wrote a long time ago because I noticed how mindless I was being. Right. And I'm like, holy crap. You know, it just brought so much to my attention. So just with everything and anything, mindfulness is a very important, crucial ingredient to good sex.
Right, definitely. And I think I know we just talked about medication, but the other thing is sometimes people do a lot of substance, alcohol and drugs and stuff, and then expecting all this, you know, great sex. But it's taking away, like you said, mindfulness and being in the present moment. And when you're drinking and drinking and drinking, you're not there.
Such a good topic. And I think about going back to what you said, you talked a little bit about stress, right? How do we handle stress in a functioning way? Because alcohol, I've had couples that come in and maybe before they had a baby, they say, you know, we would drink on Friday nights and that's when we would have had great sex. Why? Because they're not as inhibited. They're not thinking about, sex is bad or touch is bad. You know, so it's like a switch, because now maybe the person is not drinking anymore because they have a newborn baby. Right. So how do we regain that? And also, men or women that drink, you know, it turns the other person off. If the other person is not drinking, it turns them off. Mm-hmm. Women, you know, we're very sensual. So smells, you know, we can go to a fabulous restaurant, but you know, when they clean with that towel, that's kind of like, it doesn't smell good. We can tell right away.
We can tell right away.
So I think, you know, alcohol and substances take away.
Right. And especially if it's too much. Yes.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. Because then you're not there.
Exactly. You're not there at all. And then how do you really engage with your partner if you're somewhere else? It just doesn't work.
Right. And you did a great talk just a little bit ago about the importance of foreplay.
Oh, my God.
Sex and intimacy shouldn't be so much about this orgasm, but about having pleasure, just enjoying playing together.
Exactly. Sex doesn't like goal-oriented, and sex doesn't like directions. It doesn't like it, you know? I think one of the things, and I'm sure April, you do this with your couples as well, mm-hmm. you know, sensei focus dates. And what are sensei exactly. focus? You know, people that haven't had sex for a very long time, it's getting back acquainted to their bodies and right. their body of the other person. Something so simple, but putting a blindfold on your partner if they consent and if they're okay with that. And just being able to put a blindfold, it takes away a lot of the noise. Mm-hmm. You know, feeling your whole body before intercourse. Expand your definition of sex. Sex is not intercourse. Mm-hmm. It's outer course. It's the right. power of touch. It's sensuality. And what I tell my guys is, like, you can't just buy her the ticket. You got to get her interested in the trip. Mm-hmm. Right? Because women work very different. I mean, research shows that men and women's sexual processes, the ones that underline, is kind of like the same thing. Right. But right. the difference is the starting point. Men, right, they have just like responsive, they have spontaneous desire, so they can get turned on. Women, responsive. We need something to respond to. Mm-hmm. So foreplay and sensual play and play is definitely a must.
Right, right. And I wish that we talk more about that in sex education, but we don't.
We don't, because, you know, it's interesting, but I think not a lot of, I mean, think about sex ed. It was not a lot of people talk about pleasure.
Right, not at all. They talk about
STDs, pregnancy, right. you know, and all this fear-based kind of thoughts, but not about pleasure. Nobody talks to us about pleasure, so I think it is something that it needs to be, you know, somehow implemented, because I think that, you know, as women, it's like we take it upon ourselves. And, you know, something that we often don't talk about, but the trauma or the sexual trauma that can happen in a married couple. Mm-hmm. Because the woman thinks that she's always supposed to say yes, because I'm married, I'm on the wife, and I'm supposed right. to meet my husband's needs. And there's many times that maybe they did something that did not feel good.
Right.
And then these little resentments are like little, you know, bags of sand that eventually become something really big. Mm-hmm. So important to be able to, you know, understand what foreplay means, you know, define sex a little bit different. Everything that we're talking about is really crucial.
Right, definitely. And I think I've met women who see the whole sex thing as a chore.
Oh, yes.
Yes, yes.
It's like, I have to take out the dog, send right. that email, put the kids to sleep, and have sex with my husband.
Right, right, right.
Is it that women don't want to have sex, or is it that they don't want to have the sex that's being offered?
Right, right. I think it's they don't want to have the sex that's being offered, because many times, like you said, it starts in the mind, the things that they were taught, you know, that maybe it's bad, this, that, or... It also starts with them not being able to communicate, or sometimes even not knowing themselves how to be totally mindful and feel that pleasure and let it come in, you know, alive in their body.
Exactly. Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. So many times that's just, like you said, it's just being able to have pleasure.
And I think what you said, everybody, I love that, right? Being alive in your body. Right. How do I turn this body on?
Right.
Right? Because same thing as that association of danger, tension, right? When the body feels comfortable, comfort, and then both mind and body feel comfortable, and then we can open up. Tension is about closing up. Mm-hmm. Right? Relaxation is about opening up. Nobody gets a massage like this.
Right.
We're really like yellow, right? And we're very just like giving into the moment.
Yes, yes. So now as we are ending our stuff and we've been talking a lot about the sexual dysfunctions and stuff. I want to go a little bit into the tips. And one tip, of course, we've been talking about is mindfulness, which is being in the present moment, learning how to actually mind, body, spirit, and soul all in one time zone, all connecting, you know, hearing, feeling. What are some other tips that you've given couples?
Just to summarize and remind people, make sure that you meet criteria before you start treating something.
Yes.
You know, the sensitive focus, you know, so it would be just level one. Of course, this is just to play around, but if it's a problem that's a little bit more identified, I would suggest for you to come to a clinician. But, you know, being able to give each other an erotic massage without touching the genitals, mm-hmm. leaving genitals off, right? And just really focusing on other parts of the body. And I also like to do this little exercise with my couples where I have them carry a little index card and I break it down into things that please me. This is called the pleasers list. So okay. Things that please me and things that I think please my partner. And I put four or five things on the list. The other person does the same and they don't share it with each other.
Okay.
Eventually they come together and it's not only an exercise to see, oh, and remember, you can't put intercourse or penetration in there. You have to put everything else that you that pleases you outside of intercourse.
Okay.
That pleases them. And then you share it and see how much you know each other and you get to pick the ones that you actually like so that you learn about your partner and maybe you can use it down the line in one of your intimate intentional dates.
Oh, awesome. That's a great idea. Yes, because sometimes people are couples don't know. And I think even over time, your body changes.
Of course.
Yes.
You know,
yes,
and really change is the only consistent thing in life. Right. And people say, but you used to like that how many years ago?
Exactly.
Come on.
Exactly. Right? Yes.
I used to have the erection of, you know, when? 22? Of course.
Yes.
You know, so it's like redefine what this means and accepting the changes as they come. And isn't that curiosity? Curiosity is the glue to a long-term relationship. So wouldn't it be fun to get to know your partner again? Right? It's part of like keeping this relationship vibrant.
Keeping
the imagination and the rush going. So really important to not compare, but really accept and practice curiosity moving forward.
Right. And one of the things we kind of brushed on a little bit, and you just kind of mentioned it, made me think about is language. And I was thinking, I've had couples before that said, you know, how a person talked to me in the beginning was fine, but now, I mean, how he talked when he was in 20, now that he's 50, trying to use the same the same kind of talk doesn't quite work.
Exactly. And I think, but, you know, and I think people, you know, because people think that therapy is about change. And don't get me wrong, there's some change involved, but it's not like I'm going to change you entirely. We're going to take your strengths and modify certain things. But if that person, April, gets you your little coffee at 9 in the morning, every morning they have your coffee prepared, that is a language of love.
Exactly.
Right. And maybe they're not the super romantic kind, but if they making it, what I tell my couples, listen, effort is the outcome.
Effort is
the result. When the person stops trying, that's when they begin failing. If they're trying, you got to give them that.
Right. I love that. Yes. Yeah. And many times we don't appreciate when people try and try and try. But like you said, that is necessary.
Yes, everyone. And you know, critical. Now that we're all watching the Christmas movies and the chick flicks, let me tell you something. What we were fed in terms of what men should be in relationships, it's unrealistic. Don't get me wrong. They're very moving and I love a good romance. But the reality is that is not reality, right? The relationships at work, you know, they get married, but we don't see what happens after they get married and they have their first child, you know? So I think it's really important to understand love language for sure. 100%.
Yes. And I like another option you mentioned earlier about setting time aside. Yes. Because we're so busy and we plan everything, like you said. So you've got to make sure that you plan time together.
And for some people, it gives them a sense of comfort, right? Because they're like, okay, it gives me a little bit of time to prepare. And I always talk about individually what makes you feel good, not what you think. My partner likes when but I really feel good when I take a shower and I put that coconut oil, right? Or I feel really good when I shave right before I see my wife,
right?
Like what makes you, when you look in the mirror, what makes you feel sensual? What makes you feel sexy? Right, because owning your sexuality, confidence
is critical.
Is number one. Yeah, is the number one.
Yes. If you don't feel sexual, it starts with you.
Yes.
I'm glad you even mentioned that. That's another great aspect of looking at it. Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And also what you just mentioned, also the different smells, the different textures also helps in the sense of being close and being more intimate.
Absolutely. And like I was saying, you know, even putting some music on, like I have, I always tell my clients, you know, whenever we're going to do any type of exercise, we talk about what candles you like. We talk about, you know, what music you like. And, you know, some couples like turn around, they're like, oh, I didn't know that. Even in those conversations, there's so many spaces for learning. Mm-hmm. Right? I had a couple where, you know, they love having their kids in the morning, but, you know, all their toys, they went into the room. I always ask them, take me to your room. What does it look like? Well, we go in and we step on toys. Just them putting the toys behind the couch where they didn't see it gave the room an adult-like feeling.
Wow, okay.
Right? So what does that space look like? And I tell them all the time, listen, if you came in my office and I have papers up the wazoo and, you know, there was dirt, you would say this lady's a little,
yes, exactly.
Right? Like, setting up that intentional space. Right? Because mm-hmm. it's like, okay, let's put the dirty clothes aside and let's try to have sex really quick. That's not sexy. Right. That's not sensual. And sometimes that could happen and that's okay. But not if we're trying to work on this part of the relationship. And it takes the, because, you know, one topic that a lot of my couples argue about is initiation. You initiate, I initiate.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
So when we put it on the calendar and we say, Wednesday night, we're going to put the kids to sleep. We're each going to do our thing and then we're going to meet in a certain part of the house. Right? It takes away who's going to initiate.
Yes.
So it takes away that pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And feeding your sexual energy, you guys, like, you know, self-exploring and masturbating outside of the relationship, you know, bringing that into the relationship. All these things are important to be able to create, you know, a good sex life.
Yes. Wonderful. Yes. Wow. Well, this has been such a great hour. Yes.
Thank you, April. I so enjoy your company, even though we're far away. But, you know, I so enjoy doing these things. Thank you again for having me. And whenever you want to have me back.
Yes, definitely. Yes. So say your website again and where individuals can find you.
Sure. So Life Discovery Psych, and that is my website. My email is paola@LifeDiscoveryPsych, and my Instagram is Life Discovery Psych as well. So Life Discovery.
That's yes, down in Miami, Fort Lauderdale area.
Yes.
Thank you so much for being on the show. You're always welcome back. And everyone out there listening, thank you so much for hearing our show today. And we'll also be on a podcast. All right,
thank you.
Thank you.
I'll see you soon. Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.